One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
So, Matt, the other day we went up to the airport to pick up one of our friends that flew into town. And while we're standing there waiting on his bags to get around, this lady just like fainted on the baggage carousel.
Yeah.
And we didn't stick around, but as we were leaving, she was slowly coming around.
It's good.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I guess I'm all right.
We all right? Yeah. I feel you, man.
It's been one hell of a week.
Dude, tell me about it. I know. We were talking about it before the mics got turned on, but we are both beat because it has been a crazy week for both of us.
Yeah.
It's into school here this week for our kid. So
well,
ours too, into school stuff.
Mine just finished up exams this week.
Mm-hmm.
So they're officially out as of today, yesterday.
Yep.
Yeah, today was both of their official first full summer break day.
Oh, yeah.
They have more crap going on now than they did when they were in school. And
yep.
And I felt like I was the ultimate dad taxi then. You know, now
right.
They're like, I got to go to this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking, it's not, I want to go to this person's house. I want to go swimming at this. No, it's crap that they have to do.
Oh, geez.
It is still school related, even though school is over.
That's
I'm
wild.
Just like, good. It's like, do I get a break? Do I ever
no.
get a break?
No, parents do not. We said this last week and we'll say it again. Make sure. If you listen to us, especially on Apple Podcasts, but on any podcast platform, make sure you got a set to auto download. You don't know how much that helps, because not only does it help us get that initial day downloads, but I know for me, and so I know I'm not the only one, if I don't see a show pop up, I forget I'm listening to it.
Oh, like yeah, if you got so many in your queue.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so if it doesn't auto download and come up in my recent episodes list, then I forget about it for a little while.
Yeah.
And I'll have to go back and catch up. So do us that favor and go make sure you have us set to auto download when we drop a new episode. That's a big help to me and Matt.
Yeah. And just so you know, we're not joking around about this. It's not just to stroke our ego. I mentioned this to Amanda last week, that we had this concern that had popped up that this is what was happening. And so she immediately grabbed her phone and she looked, and sure enough, she was one of these people that when she updated her phone, the auto download feature was gone. And so it wasn't just Graveyard Tales. It was several other shows.
Mm-hmm.
that she gets downloaded regularly. They had all stopped, and she goes, look, and there it was, turned off. And it's just a simple little setting. You just click the little tab, and then when a new show comes out, for whatever show you've got, it will automatically, because if you're out like me, if you get out far away from town and maybe you don't have a great cell phone signal, your phone won't download something as large as a podcast file that's, you know, even 30 or 45 minutes. So you may be like, well, crap, you know, I can't listen to my show. Normally they're already on my phone ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what you need to go check.
Yep. And then write a strongly worded letter to Apple about doing this crap.
Yeah.
It can join mine and Matt's strongly worded letters to Apple. But also if you're not a patron already and you can't, you think, okay, I just one episode a week of Adam and Matt is not enough.
Yeah.
I need to hear more. Then go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales and sign up to become a patron. You can hear a lot more because we not only put out a bonus episode every week for all levels, but our $5 and $10 a month members, they get the video version of that and they get the ad-free audio and video versions of the main episode. And if you're a $10 member, you get all that. Plus you get our second show, Side Quest, which me and Matt have so much fun doing.
Oh yeah. It's a blast.
Yeah. It's like basically like you're sitting down with me and Matt and just BSing.
Yeah.
So you can grab your beer and sit down and listen, join in the fun because we do some games sometimes and you can play along. You know, we do videos where I show Matt videos, some crazy messed up videos that I found online. And, I just want to get him to freak out or laugh or something.
Vomit.
Sometimes they're fails, like really bad fails. Sometimes they're just funny, but go over there, patreon.com/graveyardtales and sign up, pick a level and you'll get more of me and Matt. So Matt, that's all I got for housekeeping. So why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
All right. Tonight we're going to dig into, a fairly famous story of a UFO abduction. And it's one that I don't know if it's because of ones like the Travis Walton story or the Betty and Barney Hill story. They got, So much has been done about those that this one kind of fades into obscurity a little bit, mm-hmm. but it's one of the most bizarre, you know, without a doubt. And this is, Terry Lovelace's account of his alleged alien abduction while he and a friend were camping at Devil's Den State Park.
Mm-hmm.
This occurred in 1977, and it is one of the most detailed, but also, like I said, one of the most strange and bizarre narratives in UFO literature. I mean, it's out there.
Right.
But there is so much that happens. It's so compelling that you just can't help but be drawn in by it. Now, for those of you that don't know, Terry Lovelace was a former U.S. Air Force medic, and he later became the assistant attorney general.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept this story secret for decades before releasing it in a memoir in 2018. So, you know, in reality, this story is only about 7 years old. I mean, he didn't tell, even though it happened in 1977.
Right.
We've only had it for about 7 years, but even still, it doesn't get a whole lot of traction, at least not yet.
Which I don't understand. I really don't.
Because like when we get into it, you're going to be like, holy crap.
How
did I not come across this? You know, I look at this stuff all the time, you know, where was it?
Yep. But it was hidden away.
But I think you're really going to be shocked at what you hear, about what happened to Terry, and not only during the abduction, but the aftermath, you know, what, mm-hmm. what his life was like after all of this. And we're going to dig into that, but it is unique that it's another state park that had something totally out of the norm occur. These state parks are just like hotbeds of weird activity, whether it's cryptids, whether it's UFOs, whether it's disappearances.
Yep. Time
all,
slips.
All these state parks all over the country have just, you know, strange phenomena. And, we've talked about it before. What's going on there? So Adam's going to talk a little bit about Devil's Den and the surrounding area, why it could have occurred there. And then I'm going to be getting into Terry's account of what happened to him. And then we're going to discuss the events that occurred afterward.
Right. So as we always say, go check our sources down at the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all the information and you can continue the research because there's going to be stuff that I leave out just for time's sake. And I think Matt as well. But check sources, scroll down to the bottom of the show notes. You can find all the sources that we use down there. Everything we say comes from one of those sources. And I'm going to try to breeze through the history and the location portion of this episode. And I know there's a few jerks out there that are going, thank God. I have been waiting for an episode where Adam shuts up and does not bore me to death.
I don't know that that's the case.
There's probably one. There's probably at least one. There's one out there, yeah. So I heard you, Earl. I know what you're saying. But Matt, it's because Matt has so much to cover in his part. So let's go ahead and get into this real quick. Now let's look at Terry Lovelace real quick. Now Terry was born in St. Louis, Illinois, but a lot of his early life and childhood isn't widely published. You know, most of the coverage in his books just focuses on his adult life and what happened during and after his experience. But got a wee little bit that he talks about. After he completed high school, he enlisted in the U.S. Air Force. And after boot camp, he served as a medic and an EMT for 6 years from 1973 to 1979. Now, his training as a medic and EMT meant that he was perfectly suited for duties in the emergency room, where he spent most of his time at Whiteman Air Force Base Hospital there as a first responder. Mm-hmm. So first responder in the emergency room at Whiteman Air Force Base for most of his time there. Now, after he left the military, Terry earned a bachelor's degree in psychology, cum laude, from Park University. So we can already tell that Terry is a smart guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a medic, EMT in the military. 6 years in there. Now he's got a bachelor's in psychology with cum laude. I don't even know what cum laude means. So that tells you how stupid I am.
It means cum loud.
I hope not.
With honors, I believe is what it means.
Well, there you go. Matt can look it up while I'm reading here. Well, but yeah, from Park University.
I know that cum is Latin for with.
Mm-hmm.
And laude, L-A-U-D-E, it's where we get the term laud or praise.
Okay.
So I do believe
with praise. Yeah.
I do believe that is the definition. I'm not looking it up. I promise.
We'll go with it. We'll go with it. Well, after that, he earned a Juris Doctor from Western Michigan University, and he was admitted to the bar the same year. So Terry worked in private legal practice, focusing on civil litigation and criminal defense, and he entered public service as an assistant attorney general for the U.S. territory of American Samoa, where he also served as general counsel for the LBJ Tropical Medical Center. So to say this man was an overachiever is putting it mildly.
Exactly.
This guy was, I mean, he was smart and he was a hard worker. He later served as state's attorney for Vermont's Board of Medical Practice, and he retired from public service in 2012. Now, he is a member of the American College of Healthcare Executives and was certified as a healthcare risk manager. Because of his degrees in legal service, the military, and public service roles, he's known as a respected member of his community, and everyone who knows him holds him in high regards. So, believe it or not, Matt, he is actually a neighbor of mine because he has lived in Dallas, Texas for 50 years now.
Really? Oh,
yep.
Very good.
He is a DFW guy, been for a long time. So, Terry, if you hear this from one Texan to another, how's it going? Okay. So, because of his career in politics and the public sphere, he decided to keep his UFO experience quiet for decades out of concern for his career and his reputation, which we've seen very often in these situations. People will worry about ridicule from their peers if they were to come forward with their story.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Matt was saying he didn't come out with this story until 2018.
I mean, remember how we've talked about when somebody's got something to lose,
mm-hmm,
and it wouldn't behoove them to tell this story, then, I mean, Terry is definitely one of those people. He
right.
had a lot to lose.
Right.
And in all fairness, took a big gamble coming out in 2018 with this story.
Sure. Sure, he did. So let's real quick look at Devil's Den State Park. Now, Devil's Den State Park in Arkansas is a 2,200 to 2,500-acre park. It's located in Washington County within the Lee Creek Valley in the Boston Mountains, which is part of the Ozarks. None of that sounds like it's in Arkansas.
Right.
The Washington County, Boston Mountains. It's like, well, pick a state, man. What state are you in? Well, it was established during the Great Depression on October 13th, 1933. Now, the land had been recently forfeited by owners who were unable to pay their taxes on the land. So within days, the Civil Conservation Corps, or Triple C, company arrived by October 20th, 1933, to lay out the park. So they jumped on this opportunity. Now, over the next 9 years, the Triple C built almost every major facility. They graded park roads, which one is now Highway 170, and hiking trails. They constructed a stone dam on Lee Creek, and they erected dozens of rustic cabins, picnic shelters, and administrative buildings. So all of the Triple C structures used locally quarried sandstone and native timbers in the, quote, rustic parkitecture style that blended into the forested valley. I like the parkitecture term.
I know. It's kind of neat.
We talked about it in our Niagara Falls episode because they did the same thing there. But I still find it cool that parks will do that. Use locally sourced material and make it blend in with the rest of the scenery.
Mm-hmm.
So the Triple C camp included its own barracks and mess hall. By 1937, the Lee Creek Dam was finished, creating Lake Devil, which is an 8-acre reservoir. Why did you have...
I was thinking too, why did you do that?
Lake Devil, that's unnecessary is what that is. I know it's Devil's Den State Park, but where did all this devil stuff come from?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Now, development continued until the Triple C was disbanded in 1942. All right, Matt, so let's talk about one of tonight's sponsors, MeUndies. Now, if y'all are anything like me, then... And it's not the case anymore, but at one point, my wardrobe in one specific area needed an upgrade. And we're talking about the underwear drawer.
There's just because, a waistband with some fabric hanging down from it.
And the ones that did have fabric were basically pointless.
Yeah.
You know, it pointless boxer briefs that did nothing for me. And people don't think about it all the time, but your underwear is the real MVP of your wardrobe. It does so much for you, and it never asks for anything. I mean, it's supporting you, keeping, you know, your butt from being exposed to the world, and it's got to deal with all that stuff. But a lot of underwear doesn't give us the support that us guys need. And I found the MeUndies Ball Caddy boxer briefs. And they, I mean, ball caddy is the perfect way to describe it, because you think about a caddy in golf. They support the player. They help the player out through the game.
And they carry his bag.
And they carry the bag. They carry the extra balls, all that stuff. That's perfect. A perfect way to describe the ball caddy undies from MeUndies. I can't wear anything else besides these ball caddy MeUndies, because they support you, keep everything there. And because of that caddy, you know, there's no sticking or squishing or anything from the summer sweats. And they dry real quickly, so you don't have like soggy undies at the end of a work day.
And MeUndies has a style for everyone. They've got a cut for every guy's butt, with over 10 different styles ranging from boxer briefs to jock straps to our special pouch underwear, as Adam said, the ball caddy, that keeps you from bat winging ever again. You know, bat winging is a term that it makes perfect sense, and now I hear it everywhere.
Mm-hmm. It used to not be a thing, but I remember talking about it years ago, and Ashley's like, what's bat winging? And then I had to explain that to my wife, and...
It's just now that thing that happens to guys when you sweat down there. It's got a name now.
And you don't wear MeUndies.
That's right. And they have unmatched comfort. MeUndies signature softer than soft ultramodal fabric is breathable, stretchy, and oh so comfy. Listen, I was in Gatlinburg 2 weeks ago. It was a little cool, so I had to wear jeans and my MeUndies, walking, doing all this stuff, went on a hike, no problem. It was great. It was unbelievably comfortable. And MeUndies are responsibly sourced. They use sustainably sourced materials and work with partners that care for their workers. So if you look, you don't have to listen to Adam and I. Go find out for yourself. Slide into game-changing comfort with MeUndies. Support our show by going to MeUndies.com/graveyard, that's GRAVEYARD, and use our code GRAVEYARD to get 20% off your first order plus free shipping.
That's right. Help support Graveyard Tales and go to MeUndies.com/graveyard and use our code GRAVEYARD, GRAVEYARD, and get yourself 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in. So real quick, before Matt takes over, let's run through some key historical events just to kind of finish out my part, so that we can get on with the wild encounter that Matt's going to talk about. Now, 10,000 to 70,000 years ago, there was a massive hillside collapse that created this sandstone crevice landscape with about 30 acres of hillside sliding into Lee Creek Valley. So that formed the caves and bluffs and ravines that Devil's Den has now. Up to 8,000 years ago, Native Americans used the area as hunting grounds, and archaeological evidence of 6 prehistoric sites have been found. So in the early 1800s, European settlers arrived in the area before Arkansas becomes a state in 1836. Now, in 1858, 1861 area, the Butterfield Overland Stagecoach route passes less than 5 miles from Devil's Den, with the area's caves rumored to be outlaw hideouts. So, you've got enough caves in there, and they're secretive enough that outlaws were using them most likely to rob the stagecoaches.
Right.
Now, during the Civil War, the area is used by Confederate guerrillas as a hideout and staging area for raids against Union supply lines and civilian targets. Both Confederate and Union troops use the Butterfield route during the Battle of Prairie Grove and the raid on Van Buren. Now, in 1893, the town of Anna, located within what is now the park, is destroyed by a flood. So only a cemetery, a well, and some foundations remain from that, and you can see them along the Butterfield hiking trail. So that's a cool thing to see. If you're walking along that Butterfield hiking trail, you can come across the remnants of the town of Anna. Now, in the early 1900s, the park's reputation as a hideout continues. Local lore says incidents like the Dotson brothers burned down a school in that area. In the 1920s and 30s, caves in the area are used for moonshine production and storage during Prohibition. So, I mean, if I was a moonshiner, I would too. Shoot.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you get a natural hiding spot, you know, difficult to find product and people. So.
Yep. Now, 1950s and 1960s, some of the Triple C cabins deteriorated or burned. And in 1967, a flood washed out one stone bridge. Now, in 1970s, extensive renovation and refurbishment of the Triple C built structures took place, and they preserve the park's historic character. When 1994, Devil's Den State Park is listed on the National Register of Historic Places for its Triple C-related rustic architecture. And then today, the park is recognized as one of the best-preserved Triple C sites in the United States, and thousands of visitors flock there annually for what they call the natural beauty, historical significance, and the recreational opportunities that are there in Devil's Den.
Yeah.
So it is a historic old park, and that area had been, it's had a lot of history just in that area.
Oh, yeah. All right. So it was in this area that Terry Lovelace and his friend Toby were stationed, and this is where their bizarre experience occurred. So let's just, I mean, I don't know that there's really much to intro. Let's just dig into it. June of 1977, Terry Lovelace and his friend Toby were stationed at Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri. And both were serving as EMTs, as Adam mentioned earlier. Now, they were looking for a brief respite, and they had planned a 2-night camping trip to Devil's Den State Park in Arkansas. And their goal was going to be to photograph wildlife and just enjoy being outside and, you know, get out in the outdoors. Now, they wanted some seclusion. So they set up camp on a remote plateau away from other visitors. Now, it's funny about this trip because Terry recalls having no interest in going camping whatsoever. But the more that Toby talked about it, Terry found himself almost compulsively wanting to go. So he just said something came out, you know, the more I wanted to go. So the pair decided to head up a hill to a restricted area, ignoring the signs not to go any further.
That's not smart.
Not smart. Now, remember, they wanted some seclusion, get away, you know, especially, you know, get somewhere that's dark where there's not a lot of light pollution. You can really get up there and see the stars, things like that. So, there are reasons you would want to be away from, you know, the general camping area.
Sure.
Now, on the first night, the pair observed three bright lights in the western sky, arranged in a triangular formation. Now, initially, they mistook them for stars, but they soon realized that the lights were moving in unison. They were rotating almost as if they were on an axis, and they were ascending upward.
Hmm.
So the formation began to grow larger, eventually revealing a massive black triangular craft, which Terry describes as being approximately 5 stories tall.
Oh, wow.
So imagine you're out there camping. You see these lights, and you go, well, those aren't stars. And as they begin to expand, they are a ship that is hovering above you that's the size of a 5-story building. You think about how big that is.
Mm-hmm. We normally don't think of the height of UFOs. We always talk about how wide they were. We don't talk about the height of them.
Well, when you dig into the book, he gives a more detailed explanation of or description of what this ship looked like. Almost like it was, when I first read it, I thought of like the beginning of Star Wars. Okay, you know, the camera is there in space, and you see the Star Destroyer, which is kind of triangular.
Yeah.
Kind of coming above. That's what I thought, but that's not accurate. So imagine the Star Destroyer, if you're a Star Wars fan. Does Star Trek have a triangular ship, Adam?
Hmm? You lost me with Star Wars. No, I don't think Star Trek has a...
anybody has a triangular ship. So, but imagine it's tilted up vertical instead of laying flat like you would expect.
Yeah.
Now it's vertical. This is what they're looking at. And yeah,
which is weird.
They estimate it was probably at about 3,000 feet. So, you know, that's not, 3,000 feet. Well, imagine, you know, commercial airliners fly at about, what, 36,000 feet?
Yep. Yep.
This is real close.
Yeah, that's real close.
And as they watched it, they said it was silent. And everything around them was silent. There was no, like, you know, wildlife sounds, no crickets, no frogs. But he then reported that lasers came out from the craft and it scanned the two of them while they're standing there.
Wow.
Now, as Terry and Toby watched, Terry would later report that they weren't scared. They weren't afraid of it. Which I'm like,
how?
Yeah, right. How? So he says that it was as if there was something about the lights or the craft that was sedating them, that was preventing them from running away out of fear. So they just watched. But once the sky went dark again, Terry recalls that Toby looked at him and went, well, show's over. I'm going to bed. And turns, goes to the tent, lays down. The two of them noticed they were pretty sleepy, and they went to sleep. Now, I know you're thinking, doesn't it seem weird that these two friends would witness something so extraordinary, and they'd just be able to go and get in a tent and go to sleep immediately afterward? I mean, that's what I thought.
Yes, it is weird.
I was like, yeah. Well, how? I mean, I probably wouldn't sleep for 3 days.
Right.
And I sure as hell wouldn't have done it in a tent. Right out there where I saw this thing.
Yeah, right where they were. But I'd be going home.
But again, that Terry says that was whatever happened to them while they were watching that ship. It made them calm and sleepy, and they just, the idea of running away just wasn't there.
Hmm.
So that's why they feel like that maybe they were sedated or even hypnotized
by
the lights or the ship itself. Now, following the appearance of the craft, Terry and Toby experienced a period of missing time. They later found themselves back at their campsite, disoriented, and they both had these vague recollections of being taken aboard the craft. You know, they were kind of like, what did, maybe we dreamed it. You know, they were obviously sleepy, but they couldn't account for several hours that had passed. We're like, well, maybe we just kind of dreamed that. And we thought in our head that, you know, we were doing this and we really weren't. So we didn't lose that time. We just dreamed that time.
Yeah. That is kind of a, Travis Walton type.
Oh yeah.
Thing.
Yeah. The missing time. Absolutely. For all of them. I mean, for probably 90% of the abduction stories you
Betty
find,
and Barney.
Yeah, they have this area where it's like initially they can't recall where those hours went. Now, the next night, Terry remembers waking up to find Toby at the door of the tent peeking out. Terry reached over for a flashlight, but Toby grabbed his hand and signaled for him to stay quiet and not turn on the light. So Terry moved to look out of the tent and reports that what he saw appeared to be about 15 children walking around the campsite and the ship that they had seen the night before hovering above.
Well, that's just weird.
Yeah. And he says, Toby looked at him and says, they aren't little kids. Don't you remember they took us and hurt us?
Oh, geez.
And he kept bringing up these fragmented memories of what had happened to them the night before. Now, as they watched, slowly the ship began to rise like a hot air balloon, you know, just silently just going up higher and higher. And then in a bright flash of light, the quote unquote children seemed to evaporate into thin air. Now, later descriptions of these little kids, you know, that they saw or what Terry thought looked like little kids were actually, you know, these big black eyed, you know, bulbous head, gray aliens, essentially.
Yeah, classic gray. Yeah.
After this, they were scared. So they grabbed up everything they could. They hurried back to their vehicle and they got out. Okay.
Finally.
But they went back to the base. So they were like, okay, we got to get back. So they go back to the base. Now, when they got back to the base, both of these guys showed signs of severe dehydration and sunburn, despite the absence of any prolonged sun exposure.
Yeah.
Okay, but remember, they did get scanned by these lasers. You know, that's what we know so far. So Terry's wife was concerned. She took Terry to the hospital because she said he looked like he had been burnt from head to toe.
Oh, wow. So a bad sunburn then.
So Terry and Toby were hospitalized for 2 nights. Now, while they were in the hospital, the U.S. Air Force Office of Special Investigations conducted separate interviews with the two of them, after which Toby would wind up being reassigned to another base. Now,
that's not suspicious.
There's a lot of details about what happened during these interviews, but essentially, Terry describes the interviews as being very aggressive, you know, almost to the point of, you know, they were confrontational. It was not a, hey, what happened to you? You know, no, it was tell us everything that happened. We know. But Terry was, I mean, you know, look, in his mind, if he shared anything that he remembered from the night before, he was going to be tagged as being crazy. And that was going to destroy his military career.
Right, right.
So Terry held fast to the story that they went camping in a restricted area. They knew they weren't supposed to be there. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, the interviewers kept telling them, we know you're lying. You know, you need to come clean. You need to tell us the truth. All Terry could do at that point was just hope that Toby was doing the same thing. You know, that he wasn't, that he thought, okay, I cannot tell them this. You know, this is going to be bad for the both of us if I tell. So Lovelace, from the time of the interviews, you know, over the next, you know, week or so, Lovelace noted that Toby's mental health began to deteriorate. You know, he was really having a hard time readjusting. And Terry's memories were still pretty foggy and fragmented from what had actually occurred. But Toby's memories seemed to be much more cohesive as to the time that they had lost. And he would keep asking Terry about it. And, you know, that's why, again, Terry thought, man, he's really struggling here.
Yeah.
But Terry had been instructed never to speak of the incident, anything about it, or to Toby ever again. And again,
that's not suspicious.
Not
at
all. And then they reassigned Toby to a base, you know, I think out in California. I don't recall. But away from that area.
Mm-hmm.
But he did get the chance to talk to Toby one more time before he shipped out to the, you know, he was, you know, reassigned. And Terry recalls that conversation being emotional and Toby becoming emotional and saying, you know, they got us, didn't they, Terry? They really got us. They took us, didn't they? It really happened. Mm. And Terry said he looked at him and said, yeah, Toby, they got us. It happened. And that was the last, you know, he had talked to Toby. And, you know, Terry writes that he had, after some time had passed, he decided to look up Toby again. And he had found out that he had died in an automobile accident a few years before. But, you know, a long time, I mean, you know, years and years and years had passed, you know, and he had had no communication with him. Now,
So it wasn't directly after the event.
Exactly. No. It was, you know, they had both moved on and, you know, maybe even 10, you know, 20 years afterward.
Okay.
I can't recall the number, but the interesting thing about Toby's situation is, number one, I want you to know, Toby is not his real name. Terry did not use his real name, you know, in effort to protect him.
Yeah.
But he's also gone. So this story lies solely with Terry Lovelace.
Mm-hmm.
So the one person that could possibly corroborate anything that Terry says is dead. And
yeah,
that is a sticking point for a lot of people in regards to this story. Now, as we get into more of what transpired, you're going to have to be the judge. Okay. You're going to have to be the judge. Hey, Graveyard, if you're a fan of true crime that's both compelling and respectfully told, you need to go check out Crime Salad. Each week, husband and wife duo Ashley and Ricky dive deep into both well-known and lesser-covered cases, bringing you well-researched, thoughtfully narrated stories driven by a mission to uncover truth, amplify victims' voices, and advocate for justice. Recently, they covered the Kimberly Sullivan case, a stepmother charged with imprisoning her stepson for over 2 decades, but denies everything. Her attorneys claim there's no real evidence tying her to the abuse.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And like Matt said, They do deep research and they have respectful storytelling, so we know you're going to like it if you like and listen to Graveyard Tales. They have high quality audio and production, which is a big selling point for Matt and I, and they focus on the lesser known cases along with the major cases, so you get that mix. You don't just get the ones that you're going to see on TV all the time. Some of the episodes they recently did that you might like is Truth Behind the Headlines, the Natalia Grace case. Behind the Headlines is a real child who endured abuse, neglect, and deep betrayal, and left in the mix. Before Journey was born, his father became obsessed with conspiracy theories and planned to raise him on a strict plant-based diet. Despite his grandmother's repeated warnings to CPS, nothing was done until it was too late. So if those episodes sound cool to you, go check out Crime Salad. They're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcast platforms. If you can listen to us, you can find Crime Salad. Go check them out.
At some point after the initial interview, Terry was still recovering. You know, he radiation burns were what he was suffering from. It wasn't sunburn, radiation burns. The military coerced him into a forced, like, retrograde hypnosis session. We're gonna unlock. If you say you can't remember any of this, we're gonna put you under hypnosis and we're gonna dig out these memories. Sounds really nice and fun and sweet and kind, right? You know, sounds pretty, pretty freaking invasive. Okay.
Just a holiday weekend.
We think you're lying. We're going to hypnotize you. You have no choice in this. You're going to sign these papers. Mm-hmm. Terry said he signed multiple papers, you know, and they just basically just forced him into it. And it was a chemically induced hypnosis, which again, now I'm kind of like, oh Lord, did they actually hypnotize him or did he trip? You know, did they load him full of psychedelics and then he literally dreamed all this based on the trauma of going through this event and then the trauma of being in the hospital and then being attacked by the military, which he was a part of, mm-hmm. You know, so now we're going to inject you with these drugs to quote unquote hypnotize you. Did they not just load him full of psychedelics and go, let's see what this fool says? You know, I bet said something else.
You about did. I heard that.
Gotta watch myself now. Family show. Gotta choke myself up doing it. All right. So under this hypnosis, Terry begins to recount these memories of being on the ship. And that night, he says he wakes up on the ship to the sound, what he says is the blood-curdling screams of a woman. Terry says now he notices that he is standing nude, holding on to his clothes, and paralyzed. He was
And that's why the woman's screaming.
Yeah, right. He was unable to move at all with the exception of his eyes. And he said he was using his eyes to scan and take in everything aboard what he described as being a football stadium sized ship.
Jeez.
Now he says the ship inside itself was incredibly bright, but he said there was no discernible light source. It was just as the inside of the ship just radiated this tremendous light. Like everything just lit up. So he's scanning around the ship and he noticed Toby next to him. Also, what appeared to be another 50 humans in the same situation as himself, standing there naked, paralyzed, holding their clothes. But he said there were also unknown beings that Terry describes as 15 or so gray child-sized beings, like the ones that they had seen, you know, at the campsite.
Yeah.
Now, Terry recounts that these beings could have been artificial intelligence, but he says there was another creature that he describes as an insectoid type being. And there were 3 to 4 humans in tan jumpsuits. And then there was another humanoid alien that he was about to lock eyes with. But he said when he did, it was like the most mind-numbing feeling he had ever experienced. And he says it terrorized him to this day. You know, this stare from this humanoid type being, it was like he was penetrating not only into Terry's mind, but into his entire being. He said this creature was able to read all of Terry's memories, his entire life, his family history, his deepest, darkest secrets that were hid away in the back of recesses of his mind. This creature was able to see all of it. And all it took was him locking eyes with this creature. And it was just like he turned into an open book. And a creature could see everything with very little effort.
Wow.
But he says during this time of locking eyes with this being, he began to feel himself levitate off of the ground. And he could hear Toby, who was next to him, yelling out, saying, "Oh God, no." And he began to scream. But Terry couldn't even hear his own screams. And the next thing he realizes, he's laid out on this warm slab, you know, so like, you know, kind of like what you would think of at like a autopsy table, you know, something that you would expect to be hard and cold, but it was warm, like body temperature warm.
Well, that was polite of them, at least.
Yeah, appreciate it. You know, glad you didn't lay me on this cold table naked. Now,
all the other stuff you've done to me, at least it's warm. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah. Thanks for the mind penetration.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, this creature that he described earlier as an insectoid or whatever had a bulbous head and an insect-like mouth. You know, like, you know, one of these. One of these. So
gross is what that is. Gross.
And he said this insect-like creature was becoming annoyed because Terry was screaming, or at least trying to. And Terry says the creature lowered his head down next to Terry's and telepathically told him, "Why are you screaming? You know us. You know we don't hurt you. Stop screaming. You know we take
That's
you. We know you."
Creepy.
It says he said we. You know we take you back.
Wow.
That'll
give you the chills,
right,
man.
Because now Terry is beginning to realize through this hypnosis that this is not the first time.
Oh no.
That this isn't a one-off event. He's been here before. And multiple times, if what this being is telling him is true, that he knows them and would know what they were going to do and that they weren't going to hurt him and they would eventually let him go.
Like, if you've done this before, why do you need me again?
So he says this creature reaches out a finger and touches Terry on the head and knocks him out cold. Until he wakes up later, he's in the tent with Toby. This is all during this hypnotic session, and the military officials interrogating Terry, they seemed, this is according to Terry, They seemed hell-bent on trying to wipe his mind of the knowledge that other human beings were aboard the ship working in unison with the aliens. Not that it didn't happen. Not that they didn't see the ship. That they saw other humans like themselves working with the aliens. That is what Terry took. That was what they were trying to get him to forget. Which, to me, now that's fascinating, because if you look at this on the surface, you would immediately think, because I did, they're trying to get you to forget that any of this happened at all.
Sure, yeah.
But think about that. If you're these shady officials, you know, if you believe this at all, if you're these shady guys, and you've got this soldier that you've got to do something so that he doesn't start talking about what he witnessed. Out of all the stuff that you've heard me relate that he experienced during this hypnotic session, what is the most intriguing? The mouth?
The mouth? Yeah.
That's the most disgusting.
Yeah, well, it's also intriguing.
It is kind of intriguing.
Stuck with me.
But the fact that he saw what he thought were other humans, not humanoids, humans were working with the aliens. This is the way I interpret this. So Terry comes out of this. He remembers a lot, but he doesn't remember the other humans.
So now
he tells this story to somebody who's willing to listen. And at some point they go, man, this guy's nuts. This PTSD, you know, something's happened. This guy's had a psychotic break.
Something's
going on. He's on drugs. You know, this story is ridiculous. But if somebody breaks out with, oh, and by the way, there were other humans on board and they were working with them, then somebody might go, really? Tell me more.
Yeah.
What else do you know about this? They don't want that. You know, at least that's what Terry interpreted it as.
I mean, which then makes you think, so if they were trying to get rid of that memory, were those people, like, could it have been people from the military that he might know? Mm-hmm. And that's why they were trying to get rid of it, so he couldn't one day go, I saw Carl on that ship working with the aliens, and Carl is eating lunch in the cafeteria with me now.
True. Yeah.
Hello, lover of things that go bump in the night. This is Dan Cummins.
And I'm Lindsay Cummins.
And we co-host the paranormal horror podcast, Scared to Death. Are shadow people real? What about demonic possessions? Poltergeist activity? Do you believe in ghosts? Malevolent entities? Are aliens real? Could you be abducted?
We don't know, but what we do know is that we have over 230 episodes of stories on our podcast, Scared to Death, exploring all of the possibilities.
Each week, we share several supposedly true stories that have been gathered from around the world and submissions from our own fans of allegedly true tales.
Curious about the paranormal? Just like a spooky story? Do you need more fear to fuel you through your long work days?
Come join us. New episodes of Scared to Death are released every Tuesday night. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. We hope you end up scared to death.
Yeah, absolutely. Triggers other memories.
Yeah, right.
So time passes. Terry keeps everything to himself for multiple reasons and tries to move on with his life, but it's always nagging at him. So later... There's a part where he begins to open up about this and talk about it. And he gets a knock on the door and it's a woman. And he describes this woman as being a woman, but not a woman. Something that was trying to look like a woman.
Like a womanoid.
Her hair was very odd and it was obviously a wig. And mm-hmm. he was taken aback by the wig to the point where the woman says, "Why are you worried about my hair? This is how I always have my hair. Every time you've seen me, I have this hair. So what is it? What's it bothering you now for?" Again,
oh, wow.
another statement that would make Terry believe, have I met this woman before?
Yeah.
Not only have I met her before, according to her, I've known her for years.
Well, yeah, and she used the phrase every time I've seen
every
you.
Time.
Not the last time I saw you or the last two times. It was every time, which means, to me, I interpret that as dozens of times.
Exactly. And apparently, like all the way back to his childhood.
Wow.
So she comes and she says, I'm not here to take you. We're not going to take you anymore. You know, we're going to leave you alone. But you gotta stop talking about this stuff. So this all occurs around roughly around 2012. So the other thing that occurred in 2012 is Terry goes in to have, he was having some knee pain and you know, so he goes in and he gets an x-ray, you know, "Hey doc, something's going on with my knee. What, you know,
mm-hmm.
I got some arthritis or something in there." And the x-ray revealed a small square-shaped metallic object with two wires embedded in Lovelace's thigh, along with a flower petal-shaped object in his calf muscle. There were no scars, you know, no surgical scars, no nothing. And so this discovery, it brought back, it triggered a lot of the memories and the nightmares and all the experiences he had back in 1977. Because he's like, you know, now I've got an x-ray that shows that I have this weird thing embedded in my leg that I didn't know was mm-hmm. there. And boom, what did they do to me? They took me. Did they put this in me? What is it for? Are they tracking me? Are they controlling me? What the hell is this thing?
And how did they get it in me?
Exactly. So at some point, he talks to a doctor and says, I want this thing out of me. And the doctor convinces him and says, look, it's not hurting anything. It's obviously benign. We don't know what it is, but it's not causing you any harm. We certainly can't mm-hmm. tell that it's doing anything at all other than sitting there. The risk of us trying to go in and get it out is much higher to your health than just leaving it alone.
True. Go digging around amongst the veins.
Yeah. And Terry says he couldn't even find in his words, he says he couldn't find a cardiologist that would sign off on him having surgery. So it stayed. But, you know, all of these revelations, and even this lady, the lady that came to visit him, she said, you know, you need to leave that thing alone. Don't worry about it. You know, you don't need to have it removed.
Then tell me what it is, woman.
And
you and your wig.
But all of these revelations, everything coming back to him, all of these things happening now, they led to him publishing the book about everything that happened, which the book is called Incident at Devil's Den, and he published it in 2018. So now the story goes out.
Mm-hmm.
And the book did receive a lot of attention because of these detailed accounts. I'm telling you the Cliff Notes version of what happened. The book goes into great detail about what he experienced, what he saw, what they did to him, so forth. All these things that were brought back into the forefront of his mind when he realized that he had this thing embedded in his leg. And there's pictures of the x-rays and everything, which a lot of people have, you know, they have discounted those pictures because they're like, it obviously looks like it was just something that was put on the outside of his leg, and then you take the x-ray. Which it could very well be. You know, it's difficult to do because he finally finds a chiropractor who is willing to listen to his story and goes, "Oh, no, you need to leave this alone. This is good. You have evidence of something that happened to you. You certainly don't want to get rid
of it."
And he says, "I'm going to order the x-rays, but on one condition, you're going to let me have them." And so Terry kind of thought that this chiropractor had some type of experience himself. So Terry goes and gets the x-rays. He makes photocopies for himself and he gives the x-rays back to his doctor. And he's like, it's gone. It's not there anymore. You know, or I don't know where it went, but it's gone. He said, nobody took it out. It's just not there. You can look at the x-rays. It's not there. And the doc says, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "It's not there. The little square, it's not there anymore." And he goes, "There's something there." He's like, "Look closer, hold it up to the light." And the wires that connected the little square and the little flower petal thing, they were still there. And he's like, "Well, why did they take it?" And the doctor said, "I don't think they took it. I think they gave you an upgrade. I think whatever it was you had was the 1977 version, and now you've got an upgrade, and you don't need all that extra stuff. So it's still there."
No way
to prove any of that, because it wasn't like Terry could like kick field goals all of a sudden or something, you know, or get like super strength, right. Could jump over stuff. None of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just
buildings in a single bound. I like that thought though.
I know that you know, look, you don't need all this extra stuff now. It's better. Yeah, it's like wireless. You know.
Yeah, the antennas that used to be on cars.
Exactly.
And now we don't have
They're embedded in the windshield, you know. Hey.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly. So these embedded in your prefrontal cortex. Enjoy it.
That's right. This is how we know where you are and we can communicate with you.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wondered why my head went beep every now and then.
Is that not the weirdest friggin' thing? You walk in, it's like, are they coming for me? You know?
Yeah, right.
Do I need to answer this? Like my phone? What is this?
What is happening?
Yeah, it happens to me all the time. I think it feels like you're losing your mind, but I'm like, is anybody else hearing this? I keep it quiet because I'm like, everybody's going to go, "Dad, you're losing your hearing. You need to go get your hearing checked."
Huh? Like, yeah, I know I've got tinnitus, so I ring a lot. I'll just be sitting there and there'll be this squeal that happens. I'm like, good Lord.
I know for me, you know, I wear these headphones, you know, once, maybe twice a week. Adam wears them all the freaking time. He might as well be like a radio DJ as much time as he spends with these things in his ears.
They need to just stay in there.
You need an upgrade, Adam.
Permanent. Yeah, exactly.
You just need to get them implanted in there.
Bone conductors here.
You can get them. What if you got implantable hearing aids? They're like Bluetooth. You just Bluetooth to your computer or whatever, then you don't ever have to worry about headphones anymore.
That's a good idea.
That's right.
I like that. You're thinking, Matt. You are thinking.
Now, Terry's follow-up book is called Devil's Den, The Reckoning. And this book compiles stories from readers who have had similar experiences and have written to Terry to say, "Hey, we believe you because we had something similar happen to us." Now, Lovelace's account, it shares similarities with other reported abduction cases, like the 1961 Betty and Barney Hill incident that we mentioned earlier. It also involves missing time and medical examinations. And research into alien abduction phenomena often notes recurring themes like triangular craft, physical implants, and psychological trauma.
Most of the abductions that we've talked about have involved a triangular craft, not the circular or the tic-tac.
Exactly. Which you know, if you are into the UFO research, you know, you don't ascribe to the theory that there's humans and there's aliens, that there are these other beings that have multiple races, multiple abilities, and mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, insectoids and you know, reptilians and grays and what,
tall whites,
what are they called? Are they called tall whites?
They're called tall whites, but there's
like a Norwegian another, kind of name.
Yeah,
or
there's another another name for it that I can't remember. But
Nordic, that's it. They're the Nordic people, the tall, blonde headed, you know, typically mm-hmm. you know, Caucasian in appearance. Look human, just not exactly human. So there's multiple races, and they have different roles. Some of them get along with the other ones. Some of them don't. But again, you know, if you really dig into this, a lot of people believe that these insectoid ones are the ones calling the shots. You know, everybody, you know, the reptilians and the grays may not get along, but they both do what the insectoids tell them. You know, it's like, you know, it's like that coworker that you don't get along with. You both have to listen to the same boss, but, you know, screw him, you know? So that is an idea, but, you know, Adam, you're right. These abduction cases come from these triangular shaped ships, but that's not the only type of ship that we've come across in researching these, you know, these UFO right. cases. You know, there's a lot of different kinds, but there is something very unique about these triangular ones. Now,
and that,
go ahead.
That leads me to push this conspiracy theory that I've toyed with for a while, that, and I was actually talking to my physical therapist about this today, believe it or not. We probably know, even though we don't say it, we probably know what 80% or more of the UAP sightings in America are. And I would say 80-85% of those are us.
I would say that
it's
now.
It's something we've got. Yes, now. Yeah. It's something we've got, something that we have worked on, but we don't want to let anybody, especially our enemies, know. So you look back several years ago, we talked about the TS-3B craft, and that was on everybody's lips. Everybody who had a podcast that talked about UFOs talked about the TS-3B, which was the triangular craft with the three lights on the bottom. Okay. What if all of these quote abductions, because they seem to happen only with triangular UFOs, are us abducting us, like Dr.
Stephen Greer. That's
Stephen
what
Greer
said.
Yeah. So what if that all kind of is, and that's why Lovelace saw the humans working with the insects is because, that's us, and the insects are just happen to, they come to our ship for this one, and then they go back to their own for the other. Or maybe the insectoids are always here.
Yeah, two schools of thought on this is that the abductions still happen because we have an agreement with them to allow them to take a certain number of Americans, test on them, abduct them, do whatever they need to. And in return, we get the technology. Now, that theory dates back to like the 50s. Like, that's when all this started, was, you know, they became known to us. We worked out this agreement with them. And since that time, this is what's been happening. The other idea is that we did become aware of them. We either were given technology, or we reverse engineered technology that we found. And now we're responsible for all of it. You know, the U.S. government in particular is the one that is snatching people up, you know,
yeah,
giving them these stories of being abducted, you know, putting these memories in their head, you know, but my thought is why? I mean, why?
Yeah.
I think Stephen Greer, Dr. Greer, he says, you know, it's a distraction. It's a red herring. You know, look at this.
Mm-hmm.
Look over here. Quit looking at what we're doing over here. But look at this, you know, this bright, shiny alien abduction story. Check it out. Is it not fascinating? Look at the evidence that they've got.
Isn't it a lot cooler than this other one?
Yeah, other than maybe this black ops site reverse engineering an anti-gravity ship. You know, we don't want you to know about that because we don't want our enemies to know about that. But
exactly.
This over here that is totally us, you know, look at this, believe in aliens, whatever you got to do, look over here. And I honestly, when I sit down and I think about this stuff, if I'm going to go down one path or the other, I would say it's a mixture of both. You know, it's,
yeah,
this is I believe there's something else out there, you know, and as a regular human on this planet, I don't know what it is. I just enjoy seeing the stories and learning more. How much of it is true is almost impossible to discern.
Sure. Yeah. And we never will we get.
Oh,
that,
I don't believe so either.
That
I just think we're going to, I heard this, on a show the other day. They said, everybody is all, look, all this information that's coming out from these congressional hearings and this stuff is by the Pentagon. We're like, look, these people that are talking have been approved to talk by the Pentagon. Why do we not believe that these people are working for the Pentagon?
Right.
I mean, I mean, when I heard that, I thought, damn it. You know, they're right. Why would
it's
we
true,
believe
yeah.
any of this truthfully?
Well, and we've heard
the government's
so
going,
many.
This is what you look. And I'm like, quit looking. Because anytime the government says look, you know, there's something else going on.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's just, it's nuts. And, you know, this is another one of these stories. The big thing from this is that the consistency with the other abduction stories, you know, it has a lot of the same aspects to it. Plus, the idea, Terry Lovelace is no slouch. He is a very intelligent man. He has his bona fides are strong. And like I said at the top of the show, he most certainly had stuff to lose by coming forward with this story at all. So those two things, they put a little bit more credit behind the story itself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some aspects to it that make me kind of go, you know, chemically induced hypnosis, the fact that Toby is no longer with us, nor was that his real name. You know, we don't know if he or ever told anyone else. And if that person knows and is just not saying, who knows? Was he killed? I mean, you always hear about these people dying in a car accident, or did he exist at all? You know, that there's so many questions about this. It's a lot of fodder for the skeptics to take out, you know, I mean, just completely say this, you know, this is one man's, you know, fiction. You know, he could have just as easily written, you know, a bestseller on the fiction list, as opposed to this, you know, memoir of these events. I don't know, but I know this, if you listen to interviews, with Terry Lovelace, he, much like the other people, much like Travis Walton, you listen to him long enough, he will convince you that this stuff happened to him. And this thing that he found in his leg was 100% real. And that, you know, he's got pictures and evidence that it did exist. I mean, the book is amazing. I've not read through all of it, but I've read large excerpts from it. Again, if you enjoy this stuff, check out the book. I have not looked at the second book, The Reckoning, where it has all of the other stories, but I would imagine I would probably enjoy that one even more. You know, hearing other people's stories and looking at the consistencies between them. But again, you got to believe somebody else. I mean, you know, I wasn't there. Neither was Adam, at least as far as I know.
Nope.
There have been days I've thought, man, they have replaced him. They have taken Adam and now they have put an alien in an Adam suit. And this is who I'm talking to for the last 2 years.
And Matt will never know.
We won't.
I mean,
but man,
it's not like every now and then I go, and then there's a problem.
When I watched you eat that bug off your microphone that night, I began to worry.
Yeah, that shit. I needed the protein, man. I need a little protein hit.
But tell us what you think. Are you familiar with this story? Are you familiar with the Terry Lovelace abduction? And if you are, or if this is the first time you're hearing it, what do you think? You know, is this just another, hey, that's a really cool story, it's totally false? Or do you put some weight behind it because of the reputation that Lovelace has and the fact that he did hold on to this for a long time before he decided to come forward? Does that work in his favor or against it? I don't know. You be the judge. Uh-huh. The best place to talk about this and let us know is in our Facebook group. It is called The Graveyard. We have tons of topics in there. People discuss, people throw some jokes in there and everything. It's a really good place and it's a private group. So, you know, if you got a boss that thinks you're, you know, wacko for even considering any of this, he's not in there. Okay.
And if you need that's true. And if you need a good place to get your paranormal memes, yeah. We got those in there,
too.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely. We got tons of them. UFO, paranormal, anything. You know, your picture of the werewolf belt that I used to wear, you know, it's all in there. Don't forget to go and check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. That is where you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. Please go check out our new storefront. Adam and I promise this is not I'm not blowing smoke. We were working on it today, trying to get some new merch up there, some new images from the show, some things that people have requested that we have stickers or t-shirts or whatever that say these things. We are working on it. I promise.
Yeah, our pixel size is the only problem. So, you know, if you're good at that kind of stuff, reach out to us.
Right. Yeah. If you're handy with this stuff, let us know.
I can build you a dang table, but you want me to do something on the computer?
Man, you know, I'm quick with a pick, but man, as far as making it the right size and you know, all this stuff,
yeah,
you know, who knows? But anyway, until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.